Hello, and welcome to episode 123 of Speak Beastie for November 1st, 2020. I'm Rex.
I'm Shannon.
And I'm Amy.
Yep.
Woo!
That's it. The three of us. The three amigos.
It's episode 1, 2, 3.
That's why I really wanted to, like, do the announcement, because it's one of my... I like when the numbers do that.
It's only happen once that it'll be episode 1, 2, 3. I mean... Eventually, I guess it'll be episode 2, 3, 4.
Or that's not as exciting.
3, 2, 1.
That'll be a long time.
That's a lot of episodes. 3, 2, 1. That's more than 100. That's more
than 200. Yeah.
Yes, it is more than 100. That's how numbers work.
It's already more than 100.
Math.
Great start.
Well,
we're back.
Let's go to the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as $1 dragon a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
Today in the Phoenix Register, not a lot of news, as I'm sure everyone is aware. Because nothing is happening at all in the world. A lot of stuff is happening in the world, but it's all kind of concentrated. And most of it doesn't have to do with movies.
But luckily, the movies finished all of filming that one day before the shutdown.
Yeah, March.
Exactly.
Yes, the movie has returned to filming, we know. But we don't know anything about that, so... So the one kind of piece of news we have is that the Fantastic Beasts, the Wonder of Nature exhibit is going to finally open up in London. It was originally supposed to open in spring 2020, but that was obviously delayed. So now it's going to be opening on December 9th at London's Natural History Museum. And we'll be there until August 2021. So about 9 months. The exhibit highlights the real-world creatures that have inspired some of the Wizarding World's magical beasts, and tickets go on sale to the general public November 12th. So that's about a week away. And they go on sale to Wizarding World Gold and Museum members November 9th.
It opens 9 days before my birthday.
Wow.
Just so you know.
So...
Will I be going?
Yeah.
No.
Are we throwing a party for Rex's birthday at the museum?
Speak Beastie
Meetup. I would love to go to this. I would like to go to this even if I wasn't into Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's in London.
I thought you were going to say, but unfortunately, it's about Fantastic Beasts.
Unfortunately, it is about Fantastic Beasts, so...
Yeah. I'm hoping it comes to New York. Like the History of Magic exhibit did. Because I would love to go to this.
Yeah, I could maybe get to New York.
Wasn't something supposed to come to Chicago?
Oh, Chicago.
I don't know, Rex. You're our Chicago correspondent.
I know, I'm the Chicago... Anne would definitely know. But sadly, Anne is not here today.
Yeah.
She is somewhere else in Chicago.
Yes, that's the Phoenix Register.
So much news.
I know.
Oh, but just wait until you get to the owl post.
Yeah, we have even more owl post. Not.
Hoo-hoo. We have a little note here in the doc. It says, there are no emails.
By A. So it's like Pretty Little Liars.
Like, it's probably Ashley, but we can't be sure.
It's
A. Who is the mysterious A?
Send us emails.
We have a lot of A's on this podcast team, so.
We do.
Do we?
Could have been you, Amy.
It could have been.
It could have.
Or it could not have been.
Because there is, like, at least four, I think.
You'll never know.
XOXO Gossip Girl.
Just throw in all of the TV shows.
all of the TV shows, because there are no emails, so we're substituting with television.
So if you would like us to not talk about Pretty Little Liars and Gossip Girl, please send us emails. Make us feel loved.
Yeah. Even if it's just a, you guys are trying.
That's not even like a positive or a negative. That's just a neutral, like, well, you guys did try, like.
Yep, you recorded that episode.
Yeah.
Just let us know that you heard this episode.
Yeah, just send an email that says, I listened to episode 123. Nothing else.
And maybe it will be read on the next episode.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Do we want to tell them, since we're talking about it so much, where they can send emails?
Sure, we can kind of jump in down there. Why am I scrolling down for the email? I know the email.
I did the same thing.
Rex, you didn't even know that 200 or 321 was more than 100. I don't know at this point if you can recite that email. it's not a good start.
But you could email us to tell us that you listened at speakbeastie@gmail.com.
Yes.
Yes, you can.
And we will also include it later on in this episode.
Yeah, as a kind of Easter egg.
Ooh, spooky.
Yeah, you could. Spooky.
But
this is our Halloween episode. It comes out after Halloween, but doesn't it?
Maybe.
But we're recording it before Halloween, so it's spooky.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it comes out the day after Halloween. So it's still Halloween spirit.
So it's Christmas time.
It's Christmas!
But now that we figured...
I saw in my head the moment where Queenie, like, makes the little confetti. And it's like, we're married! Except it says, it's Christmas!
It's just, like, red and green confetti.
Yeah, someone make that gif happen for me, thanks.
And email it to us to be featured on the next episode.
We're gonna feature the gif. I'll describe it.
Maybe the episode title needs to just be our email address.
People will be like, this looks like a glitch. Wasn't this supposed to be
episode 123 speakbeastie@gmail.com.
1, 2, 3. speakbeastie@gmail.com.
But now I think we should move to the main discussion, because that is why the listeners are still listening.
Yeah.
If they're still
listening. I'm excited for this main discussion.
And as you may have known, the last episode we finished the watch through of Crimes of Grindelwald. But now we're taking a deep dive into the credits. So after... we see Credence or Aurelius, whoever he is, we don't know, he probably doesn't even know, blow up the mountain. We see a phoenix. Is this the phoenix that Credence Aurelius has grown up? Is it Fox? Are they the same phoenix? We do not know. We need this answer. And then we learn that the film is directed by, wait for it, David Yates. Who knew?
No.
I sure didn't.
I've heard of him.
So I was kind of looking into what this font choice for these credits could possibly mean. Turns out there's a couple of interpretations. Just kidding, yeah. There's not, because I didn't look that
up. We're not doing that, because...
we're not talking about that.
No. If you want us to, email at us at speakbeastie@gmail.com, and... maybe it will happen.
Yeah, I mean, if you want us to do a deep dive into the credits, like, we could do that. I don't know what it would look like, but I guess, like, what I really appreciate about this is the different ways that you found, Rex, to spell Aurelius.
Oh, yep.
Yes.
That are neither of which are correct. We have,
you know what? I did this 1 minute before we started recording, so I tried.
An A-U-R-A-L-I-U-S.
But I knew what I spelled, and that's all that matters, because this is a podcast.
That's right. No one would have known if I hadn't said it. You also spelled Fox wrong.
Oh, I did.
Oh. This was a real rushed joke.
I'm struggling today.
The rest of the main discussion, though, it looks really good. I haven't read any of it because I want to be surprised by what you guys have to share with me.
Yeah, so I thought it would be interesting because we know part of the third film will be taking place in Brazil, to find a PowerPoint that I did on tourism in Brazil to discuss possible places that I did about 7 years ago while I was an undergrad.
Finally, undergrad degrees come in handy.
So, the claim to fame for this is the ambassador to Brazil saw this and was impressed by it.
Ooh.
So because, it's legit.
Yeah. And I'll probably upload the PowerPoint to the Patreon. And, well, it can go live when this episode goes live. I don't know if that'll happen. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. Who knows? Email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com if you want that.
Yeah, we'll just send you the file.
But Brazil is pretty much broken up into five regions: the north, northeast, central, west, south, and the southeast. The north is pretty much the Amazon rainforest, and there are several port cities here because the Amazon River is so vast. And this is where I personally think Castelo Bruxo is, just deep in the rainforest, closer to the other South American countries. Mm.
Makes sense.
That's all we know about it.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
And if it's closer to the other countries, it's more accessible.
But who knows where it is?
I bet that the Amazon rainforest has some cool mythological creatures.
Yeah.
Oh, I kind of, at the very end of this, I went through the Fantastic Beasts book just to add random beasts from that. Nice. That could be
interesting. I did really quickly Google, like, mythological creatures, Amazon. But I don't know if you guys know this, there's a really famous website called Amazon.
I tried that too, and it did not work out because it was referring me to the famous website that's called Amazon.
Oh, man.
I guess if we tagged rainforest on there, that might help, but I bet people who actually need to know stuff about the Amazon rainforest are frustrated by this a lot.
Send an email to Jeff Bezos.
I've never actually thought about this, but why would you call that website Amazon?
Well, the arrow in the logo goes from A to Z.
Oh.
Huh.
Yeah.
Still.
Okay.
Interesting.
I mean,
that's as much as I have on the Amazon logo.
Why would they name it Amazon? Well, the logo.
This will be Rex's next PowerPoint.
Yeah, yeah.
The History of Amazon by Jeff Bezos.
CCS on your emails to Jeff Bezos.
Maybe speakbeastie@gmail.com.
Yeah. Man, if people don't send us emails after this episode, I don't even know what we're doing, you know?
Yeah.
I'm starting to want to send us an email, like,
just to have one for next episode.
Yeah. I'll just be like, hey, Ashley. Yeah. Anyway, Brazil.
Yeah, but then in the northeast region, there's a lot of rich marine wildlife. There's this island archipelago called Fernando de Noronha. And there's also the Cariri, which is a bunch of rock carvings.
Ooh.
That I think just looking at pictures of it would be really cool just to see something happen there. Because the rocks just look cool.
Hmm.
and they would look even cooler with a random beast. And then in the Central West, it's a woodland savanna, and this is very unique for South America, and because of it, it has a very rich ecosystem. And then the South has the Iguazu Falls, and this is right along the Argentinian border. And I think this would be a cool battle scene just because of the waterfalls. All 275 of the waterfalls.
Wow.
That's more than 100. Or in the doc,
total falls.
That is more than 100.
It is more than 100. And then most of the film, when in Brazil, will definitely take place in the southeast region because this is where Rio is.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it will definitely be here. I really hope, since it takes place in like the 1930s, since it is dated, we just see Sugarloaf, which is that mountain thing off the coast of Rio, just because it looks cool.
Sugarloaf. That's such a nice name for anything. Just a sugarloaf.
It just sounds so pleasant.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to go and sit on Sugarloaf.
Oh, I just looked it up. That's a very pretty mountain.
It looks like a like piece of bread.
Yeah, like, I totally understand why it's called Sugarloaf. Man, when I get a dog, I'm going to name it Sugarloaf.
That's actually kind of a cute dog name.
That would be confusing because I did, as a child, have a dog named Sugar, but, so maybe I'll just name this one Loaf.
Problem solving.
Yeah.
And then I thought this was just cool because Rio's known for Christ the Redeemer, which I did not spell correctly in the doc because we're just destroying me. And
Christ the Redeemer.
It was built in 1922.
Christ the Redeemer. Not yet ready for.
It was built in 1922, so theoretically, ooh, we could also see that just chilling with its arms spread wide.
That sounds like just asking for some intense
battle
Christ
scene.
Metaphor thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know when movies will do that thing where it's like their hero is like standing or laying with their arms spread and you're like, I get it. It's a metaphor for Jesus.
I'm just excited to see a lot of Rio because, I mean, just obviously the time period is really interesting.
Yeah.
And I feel like we didn't get to see enough of Paris, so I'm really hoping we see a lot of this city, and it's just really cool.
Well, didn't they confirm that we're going to see Ilvermorny in this film? Which makes no sense to me, because it's taking place in Brazil and Berlin.
I don't know if they confirmed Ilvermorny. I know that we're seeing Eulalie Hicks.
Yeah, so I don't know about Ilvermorny, but Eulalie Hicks.
That's just where I got.
Yeah.
It would be cool to see Castel Bruxa, though.
Yeah.
It would be kind of cool if that was, like, the other wizarding school that we finally got to see. You know, maybe they'll visit it. Maybe Eulalie Hicks is, like, doing a guest lecture.
Maybe there. She's just on spring break.
I mean, yeah. We don't know what time of year it takes place. I'm excited to see, like, the nature. Because I know that, like, any movie set in, like, South America, they're gonna be like, we have to go to the rainforest.
Well, and I looked up the distance from Rio to, like, the Amazon, just to see how far it was. I did not write this down, but I think it was, like, a couple hour car drive. I could also be very wrong on my guess.
Here, I'll do it right now. I'll check on it for you.
Well, they can just apparate.
Or they could just hop on the Zuwo.
Yeah, that too.
Or apparate, cool. Or take a port key, or fly on a broom, or ride a magical carpet.
I mean, the Amazon is also very big. Just to search, like, take me to the Amazon rainforest.
I find it really interesting that so far we've been to two countries other than, like, England or Scotland that have wizarding schools, and we haven't seen either one. We haven't seen Ilvermorny, and we haven't seen Beauxbatons.
But isn't Beauxbatons in the Pyrenees, which is in southern France?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. But still, we were in France. I don't know.
True. Well, granted, we were in New York City, and isn't Ilvermorny in Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I don't know how close Massachusetts is to New York, though. It's a 90-minute train ride. That's all I know.
4 hours, maybe? That might be off because I'm thinking about having to go through New York, and I don't know if you have to go through. I don't know. I'm like trying to think of it as like where I am, but obviously that wouldn't be the straight route. So never mind.
So it looks like it's 1,787 miles between the rainforest and Rio. That's, like, directly in the center of the rainforest, but it's about a, like, 6-hour flight.
That's a flight.
Yeah. Or 3 days by bus and ferry. Flights start at $63, so it's not bad.
Very cheap. You just need to get to Brazil first.
Yeah.
I don't recommend you going now, though.
No.
Brazil is quite a big country.
It's the largest in South America.
Yeah. That was so, like, I knew this for my PowerPoint.
Oh, well, I didn't include all of the facts on my PowerPoint for this, but I can pull up my PowerPoint and just spew random facts.
Brazil size versus U.S. is what I'm gonna look up. The U.S. is approximately 9,833,000 square kilometers, while Brazil is approximately 8,515,000 square kilometers. So Brazil is almost as big as the U.S.
I did not know that. But yeah. Apparently, like, the maps we look at lie about the size of everything.
So. Yeah, only a globe shows, like, the true size of everything. So they are also, both the U.S. and Brazil are also much bigger than France and really any European country.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot of places to explore. We know we're going to Rio, but there's a lot of other places they could go.
I feel like we have to go to the Amazon. Because.
Yeah.
Like, you can't go there without at least showing the rainforest, and
yeah,
to destroy the blood pact, Newt will need some bizarre plant or beast thing.
Yeah,
that can It'll only be, like, be found in the beast Amazon.
In the Amazon that can destroy blood packs. Don't tell me how I know. Don't ask me how I know. Don't tell me either. That'd be weird.
Because why else would they be going to Brazil if this entire movie is taking place in Europe?
I mean, it's maybe they're going to Brazil specifically to see someone at Castelo Bruxo.
Castelo Bruxo?
Castelo Bruxo. I didn't have your little, spelled out pronunciation version open, and I was like, I can remember. I couldn't. Maybe they do have to go see someone there, you know?
Yeah.
Since that's our only, like, magical thing we know.
I know this is a hard question to ask, but at this time for when we were waiting for Crimes of Grindelwald, so about like a year out, did we know nothing still?
When did the trailer come out? Because it took forever for the trailer to come out, and I remember we really knew like nothing prior to the trailer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we didn't know a lot this far out. I feel like I still don't know a lot about Crimes of Grindelwald, so.
Well, just listen to those deep dives, Shannon.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, I don't feel like we really knew that much about the plot even going into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
We knew Nagini was in it.
Yeah.
That was kind of the fun new thing. Yeah, so. And of course, like, we knew the cast even beyond the main cast, because that's relatively easy information to find. But I don't think we have a lot of that yet. A lot of, like, random cast members.
Well, as I was telling you guys when we were preparing for this episode, there is someone added to the IMDb cast list.
Yes.
It is German Muggle 24 is the newest cast member. And that is all we know.
Oh, we know who's playing them, too.
Yeah, it's... Let me see. It's like...
Jeremy Aziz.
I knew it started with a J. Does that mean this is a 24-year-old German Muggle? Does it mean there are 24 German Muggles and he is the 24th? We don't know.
Yeah, because other than that, it's literally just the main cast.
Yeah.
And Eulalie Hicks, who we've known for a while.
And I don't think they're even really updating that cast list at all, because I remember Callum Turner was confirmed, but I don't think he's on the IMDb list.
No, he's not.
So.
But why is German Muggle 24 confirmed? It's just...
I don't know, but I'm excited to see him. He's going to be like the redheaded witch from the last one.
Pivotal character.
Yeah. But also, we don't know, like, I mean, they haven't said anything about the release date yet, but we don't know if it's possibly going to be delayed because filming was delayed so much. But
I don't understand how it won't be delayed till 2022.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it will. I think it just depends on when in 2022.
I'm going to guess it will be as soon as they can possibly release it, because
I would hope so.
Much the film industry is hurting, they're going to want to get that released and get people in the theaters as fast as they can.
And that's probably why they're not moving it now, because
if they can make the November 2021 deadline,
because the film industry is just struggling now because of the pandemic. I don't even know if movie theaters are open.
Some are.
I know Regal closed for good.
Yeah. I know in New York, most theaters can open, but they can't open in certain areas that have more cases.
Yeah.
Which is where I'm at, so none of our theaters are opening, but the rest of the state is.
I don't know. Chicago's, like, shutting down again.
Yeah.
Pretty sure, like, most AMCs here are open. I mean, Florida is, like, on a whole other
operating level, your own thing, which makes no sense, Shannon.
I know. But even with, like, the theaters that are open, there's not a lot of movies coming out.
Right.
Well, everything's pretty much coming to a streaming service right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like, why release it when you're not going to get that many people there?
Yeah. Or, it like... Some stuff is, like, coming to a streaming service and theaters, or a streaming service and international theaters. Certain international theaters, depending on the country. China, where they can make the money.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anyway, Brazil. It'll be pretty. I'm excited to see what we do there, and I'm excited to hopefully see some cool new beasts from Brazil.
Yeah, and some beasts just kind of looking through the book, because when you Google Amazon beasts, it just shows up the shopping website.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do, so I just stopped, because it made the most sense
to just stop. Why bother?
I was like, I don't want to buy this book.
I mean, but... I'm sure the books that come up in a, like, mythological fantastic beasts.
Well, one, I didn't even read the titles of the books that were, like, well, I'm not even sure if they were books. But like, true. I was just like, I this isn't what I want.
It was probably just Fantastic Beasts on DVD.
But we could see the Dug Bog, which is that driftwood beast, and it could just be chilling in a body of water. I feel like it would attack Jacob.
Jacob gets attacked by everything. Of course it would be Jacob. Jacob is like love... this series Neville. Like, just everything happens to him.
I would love a Doug Bog to, you know, do something, because then Newt could just be like, oh, that's a Doug Bog. And they're like, it's a what?
Say it's a Doug Bog.
They disguise themselves as driftwood. Like, Newt, did you make that up?
Totally harmless.
Yeah, totally harmless. Unless you look at it the wrong way, and then it will bite your head off. Because
it just chills until like, it wants to attack, I believe.
Doug Bog. Wow, the picture in the illustrated edition is just of a swamp.
Yeah, you see it. It's like
near the bottom. Where this,
it's towards the middle.
It looks freaky.
It looks like a hunk of wood.
Yeah, so it is found in South America. The classification is 3Xs. The Doug Bog's favorite food is mandrake.
Oh.
And it will do severe injury to the ankles of human walkers. So don't walk by one and watch your mandrakes. Oh, it says, like, mandrake growers have been known to seize the leaves of one of their prized plants only to find a bloody mangled mess below.
Ew.
That's depressing.
So, do people grow mandrakes in a swamp then? Like, how is the Doug Bog near their mandrake plants?
I don't know.
We know nothing of mandrakes. This is Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, not Fantastic Foliage and How to Grow It.
Yeah, how dare you ask that question here?
But then I also thought we could see the clabbert. In the book, it says it's native to the southern states, but it looks like a monkey frog.
Oh, it does.
It's like green. It looks really cute in the illustrated edition. And I just thought, since there's the Amazon River, there's the beach, a monkey frog makes sense.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I really like how in the illustrated edition it's across from the Krupp, which looks like a Jack Russell Terrier, and it just looks like this weird monkey alien and this Jack Russell Terrier looking better at just, each other.
Yep.
Just chilling. The Krupp even looks a little bit alarmed, like its eyes are a little bit wide. Like
you're not supposed to be the shade of green monkey.
Yeah.
What does the clabbert do? Is he just kind of... hang out?
That's a Shannon question.
They swing between branches, feeds on small lizards and birds. It has a large pustule in the middle of its forehead, which turns scarlet and flashes when it senses danger. American wizards once kept clabberts in their gardens to give early warning of approaching muggles, but the International Confederation of Wizards has introduced fines which have largely ended this practice. The sight of a tree at night full of glowing clabbert pustules, while decorative, attracted too many muggles wishing to ask why their neighbors still had their Christmas lights up in June.
Oh my gosh.
But we don't know when that fine was introduced, so that could be something we see, is someone keeping a clabbert to give warning of approaching muggles. That would be cool. And then Jacob is walking up, and then it starts flashing and stuff, flashing, and he's like, ah!
I just picture, like, the light going off on its forehead with, like, a little siren sound. Like,
That's how I know,
you want it to, like, open its mouth and just scream. And Jacob's like, what's it doing? Oh, that's just a clabbert.
A what?
Its siren
again,
goes off.
Perfectly harmless.
Sees muggles. Perfectly harmless, and then the clabbert, like, eats a lizard and a bird. We could write this movie.
You heard it here first. We are now the writers. Email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com for ideas. But then another creature that I would totally... this is, if one had to be in the books, it would be this one. Because it's the Lethifold.
Oh, we know how Shannon feels about Lethifolds.
I want to see one.
I know!
You've been waiting so long.
I know, because they it
they're
was
they're in
like...
tropical climates, and Brazil is a tropical climate.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Because
it was in the original list for the first movie of, like, these beasts are going to appear in the movie. And then it didn't. And then in the second one, we saw those big black banners in the trailer, and I was like, this is it. And then it wasn't it.
No, they were just magical curtains.
Yeah. Also known as the Living Shroud. Ooh, spooky. The Leatherfold is a mercifully rare creature found solely in tropical climates. It resembles a black cloak, perhaps half an inch thick, thicker if it has recently killed and digested a victim, which glides along the ground at night. The earliest account we have of a Leatherfold is written by the wizard Flavius Belby, who was fortunate enough to survive a Leatherfold attack in 1782 while holidaying in Papua New Guinea. I will not read Belby's account, but,
He used the Patronus charm to, like, defend himself. Spoiler alert.
Yes, it is the only spell known to repel the Leatherfold.
Or a Dementor.
Yeah. But Leatherfolds generally attack people who are sleeping, so people don't get a chance to defend against it a lot.
It just looks cool.
Yeah, I mean,
granted, it's just like a shadow.
Freaky. It's yeah. So I'd really love to see that because it is such an interesting creature and it is such a dangerous creature. That would be like, Jacob, what's that? Oh, that's like actually dangerous. We got to get out of here.
Well, I feel like it wouldn't attack Jacob unless Jacob dies. But didn't Dan Fogler say a couple weeks ago that like something's happening to Jacob?
I don't know. He said a lot of things.
He said something, but he does say a lot.
I think he said that, like, Jacob's got some big stuff coming up.
Yeah.
Like death. Death is big.
No. No death.
It won't happen.
Only life.
We will see only Leatherfolds. And Jacob will live.
What else you got?
But then I figured there's a lot of water in Brazil. So sea serpents.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I also thought it would be really cool if they tie in the pink dolphin legend, which
yes.
is, I think it's at the full moon, like the pink dolphins come ashore as women that wear hats because they still have their blowhole on the top of their head and they lure people to their death.
We did a newt case about pink dolphins. I'm gonna really quickly find that so we can tell people. Yes, the Amazon River dolphins. Because I remember doing this and being like, and also the pink dolphins are real.
I did a report on the pink dolphin in seventh grade science class when we had to classify animals.
That's so cool. It was episode 88, Evil Shoes. Classic. Yeah, I talked about Amazon River dolphins or pink dolphins. So, like, yeah, they are a real dolphin, but there's
apparently
also
they're mean.
Yeah. They got better things to do than have a bunch of people ooh and ah at them being pink.
And then, since there's the Amazon River in Brazil, we could see a river troll or we could see a forest troll in the Amazon rainforest. Mainly, just another type of troll, because we know what a mountain troll looks like from Philosopher's Stone.
I want to see a river troll. That'd be cool.
That would be cool, and it's got, like, seaweed all up in it. Mm-hmm.
They're purple, according to the book.
Just imagine it, like, rising up out of the water, like, slow motion. So cool.
Who has disturbed my slumber? That's just me. I'm a river troll.
Like, just going along with the other two films, I'll probably throw in some random things that aren't in the books, which I'm not going to complain about.
Yeah. We should try for, you know, future episodes where we do new cases to look up some more, you know, native legends like the pink dolphin.
Yeah.
We just need to figure out how to word it so we don't get Amazon.com.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could search Brazil.
Ooh, that's thinking.
Yeah, I just thought of that. So, like, let's keep that in our back of our minds.
Now we're on to something.
Someone needs to write this down.
No, we'll remember. Oh.
So to kind of go hand in hand with all of Rex's great info about Brazil, I thought I would kind of delve in and find some historical context for this time period in Brazil and also in Berlin, since we know now that we'll also be going there. It's kind of hard to do research like this when we don't have a specific year.
Yeah.
I know we're kind of guessing it's in the 1930s.
When did Hitler rise to power?
I have that in here. 1933, he was named chancellor.
Ooh, I feel like that's going to happen.
Yep. So there's actually a lot, which I did not realize. I mean, obviously, World War II, it's a world war. Like, it's global.
Shocker.
But I guess I just never realized a lot of the stuff that I found out about Brazil and its part, which is really, it's just interesting kind of seeing how much it affected literally every corner of the world. So,
yeah.
Wasn't there like a banana shortage? And that's why the Twinkies filling's vanilla and not banana anymore.
I have no idea.
I don't know, but we should do a time turner on that next time. Yeah,
that is a contender right there.
There's something, like, because it used to be banana flavored.
Huh. Well, I can say that did not come up in my research.
Clearly you did not try hard enough.
But anyway, so we're guessing this is going to be in the 1930s, since we know that it's supposed to kind of all wrap up in 1945 with the Dumbledore-Grindelwald duel. And so we have to start jumping years, and the last film was 1927. So it makes sense for it to be in the 30s. Brazil in 1930. Turns out there was a lot happening. There was a revolution of 1930. This is a very Cliff Notes edition of what that is, because I'm no expert on Brazilian history and I don't want to mess things up. So I'm just giving the very simplified version. If you're interested in this, please do research, because you shouldn't listen to me for a history lesson.
We are a Fantastic Beasts podcast and not a Brazilian history podcast.
Yeah. So apparently this revolution, it came about because there was a very divisive election that led to three states carrying out a coup. And they actually stopped the inauguration of the government's candidate, Julio Prestes. And instead, the opposing candidate, I'm going to butcher this name, I'm so sorry, Getúlio Vargas, took office, ending the old republic and starting the new republic. So all of that was going on in 1930. So I don't know if we're going to see any of that, or maybe get some undertones of some political upheaval that's happening.
I feel like political upheaval has to happen, not necessarily in Brazil, but somewhere, just because we know we're in World War II time.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, and we know that World War II is going to be relevant.
Yeah, very.
It might not even be this film, because I think the last two languages from the tweet by the author, I think was the number 5, or counting, I don't remember what it was exactly, but it was English, French, Portuguese, German, and Italian.
Yeah, which obviously Germany and Italy kind of...
Well, I think the upheaval would happen in, like, Germany or Italy, just because it's more relevant to World War II.
Yeah, which I think is very interesting that we're getting Berlin in this one, because that's going to start to bridge us over, I think. And also, with a lot of what I found out, Brazil actually does tie back in if we're kind of looking at the backdrop of World War II. Because
of the banana shortage.
Yes, because of the bananas. But in the 1920s...
I just looked that up. That is legit.
It is. You heard it here, folks. But in the 1920s, the Nazi movement was actually reaching into Brazil to try and gain international support. And
aren't there Nazis in Brazil?
Yes.
Didn't they flee Germany and, like, they live in the Amazon?
Currently, I don't know. I looked at the 1930s. I didn't look at now. but, yeah, so basically, the Nazis launched a propaganda effort to try and reach Germans who immigrated into Brazil after World War I, which I guess a lot of them did because of the economic climate in Germany and in Brazil, in a lot of the cities in Brazil, they were really building up factories and that sort of thing. So they headed over there for work. So that's kind of how the Nazi Party took root in Brazil, was through the German immigrants. In 1928, the Brazilian section of the Nazi Party was founded in Timbo, Santa Catarina. And like I said, a lot of Germans were in Brazil at the time, approximately 100,000 born Germans and 1 million descendants. So that's quite a bit.
I do think there were Nazis in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think, well, just like a quick Google search, I'm really not reading anything. it says, wait, of the total number of Germans, only 28,000 were affiliated with the Nazi Party.
Yeah.
And this was in like the 20s and 30s, so okay.
Yeah.
So I don't think there are Nazi communes in the Amazon now. I was wrong. But not about the bananas.
You're right about the bananas. Yeah, so kind of looking at all this, while Brazil may have seemed kind of a random location in regards to the rest of the story and kind of where we think this is all going, it actually seems like it's definitely more tied into the overall theme of conflict and war than we probably thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then obviously Berlin is our second confirmed location. So at that same time, like we were saying earlier, this is right when Hitler and the Nazi Party is coming into power. So 1930 is the year that they launched their campaign to be voted into parliament, and they were that same year. And in 1933, Hitler was named chancellor.
And do you think that they're going to Brazil just because the Nazis went to Brazil and were just kind of following Hitler in a sense?
I don't think it's the sole reason. Yeah, I don't think it's the sole reason, but I think it seems like a lot of the locations we are going to kind of do fall into this backdrop of kind of mirroring what's happening in the Muggle world.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, it's like obviously there are a lot of, you know, metaphors in the Harry Potter series for real life politics. It kind of seems like Fantastic Beasts is gonna get like more into it and like less metaphor.
Yeah.
But
well, it is also just following an adult rather than an 11-year-old child.
Yeah.
And it's like they've made, you know, specific references to both World War I and World War II upcoming. So yeah, it's kind of hard to know right now, like, how much of World War II they're gonna get into, but, like, we just also don't know, like, how much Grindelwald is, you know, like, we know that, you know, he starts a wizarding war, basically.
We also know he hates Paris.
And he hates Paris, so guess we're not going back there.
Nope.
I mean, I think we've kind of touched before on, like, maybe he's now recruiting in Brazil.
Yeah.
He could be taking a, you know, Hitler path.
Yeah.
Maybe he's collecting Lethifolds.
Honestly, why doesn't everyone just use Lethifolds to... I guess I don't know how easy they are to catch.
Yeah, but I do wonder, now kind of knowing that that many Germans did immigrate to Brazil at this time, I wonder if part of the reason we are going there is something to do with Grindelwald. You know, is there some connection he has to Brazil where someone he knows immigrated there, or someone he's trying to recruit, like you said.
Well, because Grindelwald's, he's a seer, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So he might have seen something where he just needs to go to Brazil to get something.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that something is, but it's in Brazil.
Bananas.
Because of the ration. He saw the ration was coming.
Gotta stock up, man.
All comes back to bananas. Gotta get your potassium.
Yeah, but I'm really interested to see Berlin, too. I think that's going to be a really interesting setting. Just because kind of between the two wars, Berlin in particular was really, it was thriving in different ways other than, like, obviously there was the economic slump, but, like, the arts and theater, nightclubs, like, all of that was kind of, like, a big thing at this time. So I feel like that's a really interesting setting, too.
Yeah. Exciting.
And this is all we know.
Yeah, it's like, if they would just tell us, like, it takes place in 1932, it'd be like, all right.
Let's look up everything that happened in 1932.
Yeah.
But well, we don't even know. It happens for sure between, it's in the 30s. It has to happen in the 30s, just because.
I know, yeah. It must.
Time jumps have to happen now, because. Yeah. The duel between Dumbledore and Grindelwald happens in, I believe, 45.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, that's at least 10 years.
Yeah. And it's got to be the 30s, because we're not going to just jump straight to the 40s.
Like, yeah, that would be wild.
That would be weird. Like, they need to build up that this war is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, we can't just jump in the middle of it. I could definitely see the next two movies being, like, in the 30s, and then the last movie being the war, you know?
Yeah.
I can see that. The end of the war.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of, like, a war movie they want to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't very much seem like the style. Like, they're not going to do Rogue One.
Well, like, the last one, it's going to end with the duel.
It's going to happen.
Yes, it will end eventually.
Eventually, in the year 2037.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Well, that was a very good main discussion. We ready to move on to the time turner?
Yeah. To another history lesson.
I know.
Because that's what we do here.
It's really just a giant time turner this episode. We're popping around.
Really is.
But yeah, now that we've finished the movie deep dive, we're going to bring back time turner and Nuit Case. So for this week's time turner,
a few times should do it, love.
I want to talk a little bit about U.S. and U.K. voting history, because it's about to be, I mean, the U.S.
Make
election
sure
is happening.
Make sure you vote if you're in the U.S.
Yeah.
I already voted.
Because you have 2 days.
Me too.
Yeah, when this episode comes out, like, you gotta get to it. If you have a mail-in ballot, you gotta go drop that off in person.
Yeah, don't send it in the mail, because who knows what's happening.
Yeah, or go early vote, or go vote on election day if you want to do that. But we've already done a time turner on women's suffrage specifically, and that was episode 56. So I'm going to touch on that a little bit, but I wanted to talk more about the general kind of history of voting. So in the U.S., as you are probably aware, you know, when we first became a country, this is really the case with, you know, all white countries, only white men could vote. White men aged 21 and older who owned land. So even not even like all the white men, just rich white men could vote.
I mean, over the age of 21.
Over the age of 21, yeah. So then that was for the first 100 years or so of America. In 1868, the 14th Amendment granted full citizenship rights, including voting rights, to all men born or naturalized in the United States.
Is that all men, like, regardless of race?
Let me pull up what it says exactly. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protections of the laws. But then we got Amendment 15. So that didn't specifically say only white men, but Amendment 15, which was in 1870, said the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. So 14th Amendment went through, and then 2 years later, they were like, all right, and, like, specifically also that means men of color can vote. But people were still, states were still finding ways to discriminate against people of color with, you know, poll taxes, literacy tests, intimidation, which you still see today, because it was like, well, we didn't give an education to the men of color, so now let's say, oh, you have to be able to read and write to vote, so that would unfairly discriminate against people of color. Native Americans still were not able to vote, though. Then another 140 years passed, and then, I mean, basically then we come up to women's suffrage, leading up to the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote. Then 1923, Washington State voters pass Initiative 40, which repeals poll taxes. So that helps get rid of that kind of discriminatory thing. And then 1924 is when the Indian Citizenship Act finally grants Native Americans citizenship and voting rights. Now, it was still not really easy for people of color, and especially women of color, to vote. 1964 is when the Civil Rights Act goes through, that more specifically is like, all men and women age 21 and older, regardless of race, religion, or education, have the right to vote. The 24th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution is ratified. That eliminates poll taxes nationwide, which is nice, because how annoying would poll taxes be nowadays? And then it's not until 1965 that literacy tests are completely suspended. Then 1971 is when the 26th Amendment lowers the voting age to 18. And then, like, various, you know, stuff has kind of happened since then. There's another Voting Rights Act in 1975 that, like, banned literacy tests permanently. 1984 is when it's finally, there's an act passed, the Voting Accessibility for the Elderly and Handicapped Act, that requires polling places to be accessible to people with disabilities.
What year did that come out in?
1984.
Oh, impressive.
Yeah. So that is sort of the history of voting rights in the U.S. The U.K. follows kind of the same timeline, except obviously, like, the UK has existed for a lot longer. But basically, like, for a long time, it was only, like, rich, white, landowning men who could vote. And it is interesting, like, looking at some of this stuff, because the original sort of voting acts won't say only white people, but it's like, but you have to own land, you have to, you know, pay poll taxes or whatever. So it's basically a way of making it so it's only white people. So the first kind of big wave of reform for UK voting rights was in the, like, mid-1800s, which is when the Representation of the People Acts, or the Reform Acts, went through. If you've seen Enola Holmes, new movie on Netflix, that in that the Third Reform Act of 1884 is actually a big plot point. So these basically allowed more poor men to vote. The 1884 one was specifically allowed like more men in the country to vote. For a while, it was like, it wasn't even just a landowning restriction. It was like you had to own land that was worth a certain amount to vote. So the Reform Acts kind of led to the point where it was like, well, now more, you know, poor men could vote. They still like had to be white and like own a certain number of land, certain bit of land, but it was a step in the right direction. Then we end up with women's suffrage in the early 1900s. So 1918 is when a Representation of the People Act went through. And so that allowed all men 21 and over to vote. And then it also allowed women 30 and over who owned property to vote. So again, that kind of restricted it to white women, and also weirdly only women 30 and over. But it only took 10 years after that, 1928, for it to allow all women 21 and over to vote. So that was more, from what I could read, the 1928 Act was a little bit more of a like, this is also allowing women of color to vote, than what was happening in the U.S., where that was delayed more. There were some cool women of color I wanted to mention as I open my links, who were fighting for women's voting rights in the UK. Sarah Parker Redman, who was an African-American lecturer on anti-slavery and women's rights. So, yeah, she was American, but she moved to London to get support there for the abolition of slavery in the U.S. So this was in, like, the slavery times earlier. There was an 1866 petition calling for women to be given the right to vote. It was signed by 1,499 women. Then, woman, okay, so this other lady was cool. So this was an Indian woman in the UK, Princess Sophia Duleep Singh. And there is a picture of her that you can find if you look her up, a picture of her with her like suffragette sign. So she played a big part in pushing for women's rights, which, you know, she was a princess. She was daughter to the last Maharaja of the Sikh Empire, and she was also the goddaughter to Queen Victoria, who granted her a grace and favor residence. I don't really know what that means, but she basically had a nice house, the Faraday House at Hampton Court. So she was a very active member of the suffragette movement, the Women's Social and Political Union. She, in 1911, this is an article on BBC that I'm reading this from, she had a diamond ring impounded against a fine for non-payment of licenses for a male servant, a carriage, and five dogs. In 1914, she was again fined for refusing to pay taxes. A pearl necklace and gold bangle were seized and auctioned at Twickenham Town Hall. So basically, she kept getting fined for, like, not paying for stuff. And she'd just be like, all right, here's a diamond. Go away. But yeah, so, of course, that meant when, like, the 1918 Act went through, she was able to vote because she was a princess over the age of 30. But she still, after that, kept, like, supporting the right for more women to vote and just in general have more rights. And then there was one other Indian suffragette mentioned in this article, Sushama Sen. And she wrote Memoirs of an Octogenarian, where she talks about taking place in a women's union demonstration in 1910. She wrote, quote, "It was a novel sight for a single Indian woman amidst the procession, and I was the subject of public gaze." So yeah, there were quite a few Indian women specifically in England, but not a ton. Basically just like the ones that we know about. Of course, you know, not as many Indian women in the US, Indian people. We've got got a different melting pot. But yeah, so those are some of the cool people involved in women's suffrage. I know I was like, I'm not just going to focus on women's suffrage, but we didn't really talk about UK women's suffrage before. So yeah, lots of people fought for your right to vote in both the US and the UK and all around the world. So use your right to vote and go vote.
Especially if you're in the U.S.
Especially if you're in the U.S. right now.
Please.
I don't know when anybody else votes. I didn't look that up. But if your country is going to have an election soon, vote. And vote for Joe Biden.
Please. Make your state blue.
I wish I could make my state blue.
Florida. You can try your hardest, Shannon.
Well, it's not the time. It's not an election where I can do that. I can go paint. Like, put some blue paint on the ground. I don't know. I can, like, call for revolution and get rid of Rick Scott, but... And that is it for the time turner.
So, the podcast question is, why do you think the films are going to Brazil? What's driving the plot there? We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com.
Yes. And
please do. We said it like dozens of times throughout this episode.
You better email remember us. That email.
It's speakbeastie@gmail.com. And make sure to leave us a review on iTunes or whatever platform you're using to listen to us.
Yes. A nice review.
Please.
The social media outlets that you can also drop us an owl on are at SpeakBeastie on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, and SpeakBeastiePodcast.tumblr.com. You can also support the show on Patreon at Patreon.com/SpeakBeastie, and you can leave comments there, and you can gain access to the SpeakBeastie common room. Sometimes we read out things from the common room as well, so... Yeah, definitely email us.
We also send out stickers.
You know, yeah, we send out stickers too. I actually just raised my patron level because I wanted the stickers. So, because it's the $5 level where you get a monthly sticker. So that's very cool. And I was very jealous and I wanted the stickers. So, anyway, that's it for the show. Thanks for listening. I'm Shannon.
I'm Rex.
And I'm Amy. Case closed.